What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us here for this Wednesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me on Twitter at JoeOrrico99, and also be sure to check out the Ethos Fantasy BB page. That's where we post out all of our different podcasts and articles, different links that are coming out. We've had a lot of activity in our draft guide overnight. Four new articles have been posted, and there's a couple other ones that are going to be up later today. So make sure you're checking that out at sportsethos.com. And also, like I said, go follow Ethos Fantasy BB. Get everything for you in your feed there. And we're doing another team preview today. We've been doing a lot of them recently, trying to get them in before we really, I know draft season's underway, but trying to get as many of them in as we possibly can before you guys really, truly start drafting. And we're doing a very fun, exciting team today, in my opinion. I know some people view it differently depending on how the team spends and whatnot. And I don't know, this team doesn't spend a lot of money, but they've got a very exciting roster, and we have a very exciting guest here to join us as well. Dave McDonald, how are you doing today, man?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on. It's wonderful out here in Cleveland. It's like 65 degrees. I'm loving it. Feels like, this is what we call fool's spring here, because we know better than to get tricked in, because it'll be like 20 degrees tomorrow. But just enjoying it while we've got it. Looking forward to going to Chicago this weekend to do our Glarf draft. Really excited about everything going on with Earth. I got the title belts in that I'm presenting. So, yeah, having a good time over here, getting ready for drafts, and excited to talk some Guardians with you today, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm going to be in the Earth Leagues for the first time this year. I'm in the Canadian.
Hell yeah, I didn't know that. That's awesome. Which, are you in Surf?
I'm in Surf, yeah.
Awesome. That's
great.
We're
doing March 11th, I want to say. March 10th or 11th, whatever the Saturday is on that weekend. We're going to be going out to Hamilton. I don't know if many of the American viewers will know Hamilton, but if anybody's in Toronto and Canada, you guys probably know Little Hamilton, close to Toronto here. We're going to be sitting in some kind of warehouse or something. I'm not even sure what the guys have set up there. Ryan, the commissioner, has figured it all out. But that should be a lot of fun as we get into draft season. It's just going to start really coming up on us where we're drafting constantly. Right now, I'm in a couple of different slow drafts. But come a week from now or so, I'm probably going to be doing 3 or 4 drafts at any given time at least. Dave, before we get started here, why don't you just let everybody know where they can find you and what it is you got going on right now?
Yeah, you can find me at RunDMcD on Twitter, like RunDMC, the music group, but then make sure you add that D at the end, because I get a lot of people who tweet at me about RunDMC, the music group, and I do appreciate the shout outs, but I am not the musical group. So, and then I'm on Friends with Fantasy Benefits every Monday night at 10 with Justin Mason, and I'm hoping my old podcast partner, Jake Halisker, will want to get back into high stakes heat this year, but he's just a lazy bum. So we'll see. But other than that, I'm just preparing for my high stakes drafts, and that's what I've got going on right now.
Yeah, I'm just getting ready I'm trying to get all my rankings out and trying to get completely ready for the season here. And doing TGFBI today, I actually took a member of the Cleveland Guardians. We'll talk about that when we get to him in the lineup. We're going to start right from the top if you guys want to follow along on Roster Resource. We're going to start with one of my favorite players who really came out of nowhere and became one of my favorite players last season. Helped a lot of my fantasy teams, and that was Stephen Kwan. You know, a lot of people were comparing him to Luis Arraez last season from a fantasy point of view. I think he actually surpassed Luis Arraez in terms of his output for stolen bases, and I think he actually ended up as a superior player on the player rater by the end of the season. I love him. I'm going to be trying to draft him wherever I can. I think the price is pretty reasonable. But Dave, what are your thoughts on Stephen Kwan for this season?
Yeah, he's a guy who he was always like that low ceiling, high floor kind of prospect, but he's exactly the kind of guy that the Guardians love to develop. It's those guys who have really elite plate patience. You know, they don't strike out, they put the ball in play. He's not going to jump out at you in Statcast, but the guy he's a legit hitter who can get he can lead the league in average, no question. He hit .298 last year. I'd be shocked if he hit below .300 this year. I don't care what projections are saying. I've watched this guy. He does not – I think he saw like 150 pitches or something before he finally swung and missed at his first pitch last year. Like, he was insane. The guy just knows how to put the bat on the ball. But what's more exciting, I think, is that in the second half, I think he had like 14 out of his 19 steals or something like that. Like, you know, this is a team that is not – the Guardians don't hit the long ball. You know, they signed Josh Bell, so hopefully we get some power from him. But really, this is a team that gets on base and runs. So You know, they're the odds on favorite to win the AL Central. And I'm hoping that Kwan will be a big part of that. And I'm hoping that they give him the green light to run.
Just looking at the different projections, I'm looking at ATC right now. You got three guys projected for 20 steals, and Kwan isn't even one of them, and neither is Ahmed Rosario. There's a lot of speed on this team. Those guys are Ramirez, Andres Jimenez, and Miles Straw. In terms of the power, you know, Jose Ramirez is going to probably be a 30 home run guy, and then Josh Bell and Josh Naylor, probably the only guys that you're going to see get over 20. Maybe Jimenez can get there possibly, but this team is built to, like you said, get on base and steal. And Kwan, you know, there's something I love. There's somebody who walks more than they strike out. And Kwan had a 9.7% walk rate and a 9.4% strikeout rate. And if you're just talking about the raw numbers here, he struck out 60 times last year in 147 games. It's just absurd. Yeah. he's somebody for sure. If you're talking like an OBP league, his value is crazy high. I'm not sure exactly how much higher I would want to take him in an OBP league, but he'd be close to like a top 100 pick, I think. If you're looking at the recent NFBC drafts, he's going, well, let me just take a look here, about pick 120. I think that that's pretty reasonable considering what you're going to get out of him. Do you think there's any chance that we could see like 20 plus steals from him, or is that asking a little bit too much?
He can. It's just whether they give him the green light to. I think this year with the new rules, I think he's exactly the kind of person who you're going to see run more this year. I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't, frankly. I mean, that's how they're going to score runs. And I mean, he was 19 of 24 last year. Pretty good percentage there. I would expect him to run. I would expect him to have over 20 steals. Yeah.
I'm definitely hoping for it. Moving on though to the next guy in the lineup, another guy that I really like, and that's the thing with this team. Like I said off the top, like they don't spend a lot of money necessarily. They've got a lot of good young players, and especially if you're looking from a fantasy point of view, like this next guy I'm very interested in, and that's Ahmed Rosario. Last season, 11 homers, 18 steals, he batted .283. It was pretty much exactly the same thing that he did in 2021. He added a couple more steals, but the batting average was the same, the homers were the same. Are you expecting more of the same from Rosario this season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically, you know, when I draft him, I'm expecting 10 to 12 homers. He actually does have a little bit more pop in that bat, I think, but I don't know if it's going to project onto the field, but a lot of people say they watch him in batting practice and he crushes the ball. So, you know, a lot of the locals talk about that, the guys on the team. I don't know if you're going to see that side of him or not, but again, he's another guy. You know, he's 18 of 22 on steals last year. With the new rules, he's another guy I expect to be over 20 steals again. And he's a high average guy. He's a 280, 290 hitter kind of guy. So, yeah, if you're looking for a well-rounded player who's not going to be a negative in any category, he's the prototypical guy. He's going to help you in runs, RBIs, steals, and he won't hurt you in homers either. So, in average. So I think he's kind of that guy who helps all around.
There's a few guys like Kwan is a similar boat, even though he doesn't help you so much with home runs. He's not really going to hurt you. I mean, he's projected for like 7 to 10, depending on where you look, somewhere in that range. Rosario, you know, Oscar Gonzalez, kind of the similar thing. Maybe not so many steals, but there's a lot of guys on this team who aren't going to hurt you from a fantasy point of view. And that's the thing with a lot of players that you look at drafting. You know, the first one that comes to mind is like a Joey Gallo type or someone like players who have certain skill sets that are definitely going to help you, but they're also certainly going to hurt you in other areas. Rosario and a lot of guys we're going to talk about today, they're not going to hurt you. They really aren't. And I do think that the price, again, is very reasonable going in the same range as Stephen Kwan, just a couple picks ahead of him, about 118. And I think that that's totally fair. Going to the most exciting player in this lineup now, Jose Ramirez. Now, I'm not going to ask you what your thoughts are, because I think everybody's thoughts are fairly similar that he is pretty elite, unless you have something, you know, contrary to that. But I guess I'm going to ask you, would you be willing to take him with the 101 this season?
Yeah, I definitely would. I do think that Julio and Acuna are probably going to put up slightly better numbers. But I think when you take into consideration how much of a wasteland third base is, if you don't take one early, I really, really, and I hear people talking about, you know, the outfield depth. I haven't found it to be an issue. I think that there is enough depth in the outfield. I know it might be more of an issue than previous years, but I would much rather lock up my third base early with Jose. I would take him 1-1 for sure. And the thing is, don't worry about last year. He was playing with a torn ligament in his thumb for literally like 2/3 of the season. So Like, and he still put up the season he did. He still put up 29 homers, 20 steals. So I 100% think he's the guy who's going to hit 30 plus homers with, you know, probably 25 steals, I would say, and a solid average. So yeah, I'm all about taking Jose 1-1 because I want to get that third base locked up.
I'm totally there with you. Whether it's Jose or somebody else, like, and you know, just talking about TGFBI, I took Austin Riley in the second round because third base just really does suck. And if you look at outfield, it's not great, but I can, you know, I could probably name 50 outfielders that I'd be pretty comfortable with this season, maybe 60. You know, looking at the ADP board, Masataka Yoshida is the 50th outfielder off the board. You go farther down, you got guys like Jesse Winker, Jock Peterson. Like, they're not the greatest players, but you know, still guys that are totally fine to plot into your lineup. And we're looking around like 250 ADP. If you're looking at third baseman around 250 ADP, you're not going to find anybody that you're going to be very interested in. You'd have to be very lucky, and maybe, you know, you stick a DJ LeMahieu in there, a Yandy Diaz or Rendon or somebody. But I am totally with you there. Get rid of third base very quickly from your draft from your draft needs.
I mean, even down to like the 80s, like the 82nd outfielder off the board is Oswaldo Cabrera, 81st is Edward Olivares. I love those guys. Like, I don't mind getting guys like that to fill in my like last spot or two in the outfield at all. Jared Kelenic, you can get a pick 281. I mean, you know, there's just Lane Thomas, 313. There's so much value there that, like you said, you just can't find a third base.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this next one, I'm going to give you kind of like a joint question here. The Joshes together, Josh Bell and Josh Naylor. Do you think Josh Bell is going to eat into Naylor's playing time at all against left-handed pitching? Like, how do you expect that DH first base split to kind of work? The projections, Josh Bell's called for 142 games, Josh Naylor about 130. How do you expect it to shape up?
Oh, man. I mean, I definitely know that they're going to sit Naylor against lefties. I don't know if it's going to be all lefties or just, like, some slash most lefties, but he certainly will sit against lefties. So I don't know if it's Josh Bell eating into the playing time or if it's, you know, depending on how you look at it. But yeah, like, cause Naylor can play some outfield too. So they could move guys around a little bit. But they love Miles Straw so much defensively that as much as I want to see them kind of make, you know, have a lineup where they put maybe Kwan in center field because he's so good defensively, and bench Straw and put Naylor in a corner spot, I don't know if they're going to do that because this is a team that has always been all about defense at three positions, shortstop, center field, and catcher. Now they've kind of been more lax with shortstop with Ahmed Rosario, but they're still always defense first and center field and catcher. So I don't know if they feel like Kwan just can't cover center field the same way, because Straw is just so good defensively there that I think that's really what it comes down to. But I do think of Josh Naylor more or less as maybe like a platoon plus kind of guy. Like he'll face all the righties and he'll face maybe some lefties. Some, I feel like they might have sent him versus the tough lefties, and then, you know, so something like every other lefty or something, they'll bench him versus, I believe, is what they did last year. I would expect more of the same this year.
Looking at the splits from last season, it might actually help his fantasy value, as weird as it might sound, if he didn't play at all against lefties, because he had 115 games against righties. He had 19 of his home runs and batted 283 versus lefties. It was 67 games. He had one home run and batted 173. So even though you're losing maybe a little bit of the volume stats, you're going to help your batting average. And I don't even think you really will lose much volume there. Like, you know, in those 67 games, he had 11 RBIs. He scored 4 runs in 67 games against lefties. So, you know, it might actually, you know, if there is some kind of platoon, we won't really know this till the season starts, but there might be some people who get kind of worried about him, about his outlook. Maybe even before the season, they'll look at that and they'll say, maybe he will lose some at bats and push him down their draft boards. But I really don't think it would hurt his value that much. And if people want to push him down, he's already going outside of the top 200. I'm just looking at the most recent few drafts here. I already like the price as it is. I'm kind of hoping he does get pushed down. I hope let's start that narrative, Dave. Let's start that narrative that Josh Naylor's not going to be playing that much and get the price a little bit nicer on him. Fellow Canadian, I'm enamored with both Naylors, really. And I guess that's kind of an easy segue.
He's a guy who doesn't strike out a ton. You know, Naylor only a 16% K rate, and he hits the ball hard, 42.5% hard hit rate, like, you know, 113 max EV. He can get it out there. He's got He's got the power and the contact. He's a guy you want to be putting in your lineup versus versus righties. And I think he's a little underrated, but his ADP is not as low, honestly, as I thought it would be. I actually thought his ADP would be lower than what it is, but I do think that he's the kind of guy who falls in drafts sometimes. So if you can scoop him up, yeah, he's going 235 overall, which is not, you know, that's actually a decent price. So I'm in at that cost, honestly.
Yeah, I'm totally there. If you're in a daily changes league, you know, if you're playing like a Yahoo daily changes league, I know you play in some Yahoo. Actually, I heard that episode you guys did recently talking about Yahoo. It was very good, very informative.
Oh,
you guys should go check it out on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits feed if you haven't already. A few episodes down the line there, but you guys should be able to find it. If you are playing in a daily changes league and you have Josh Naylor, you play him against all righties, then you're golden. And then you can you know, have some replace, especially in most of those leagues, 10 and 12 teamers. There's tons of replacement value. You got
free to pick up too. Like no one else is competing with you really for guys like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you're still going to get him for the vast majority of the games. He's going to play, you know, all the time against righties, and most pitchers are right-handed. So there's no real need to worry about losing playing time, even though that might be something that I was my initial worry when they signed Josh Bell was that Josh Naylor is going to suffer. But I don't think he will as much as I might have thought so before.
No.
Now, the guy expected to be sandwiched between the two Joshes in the lineup is the guy I actually took just half an hour or so ago in the TGFBI draft. I think it was 84th overall, 85th overall. Andrés Giménez, I like the security I'm getting both from the power side and from the stolen base side. I think he's another guy who doesn't hurt you really anywhere. Where are you at right now on Andrés Giménez?
Yeah, I like him. I think he's not a guy I'm going to probably end up with in drafts. Just because, like, I think he's a solid player, don't get me wrong, but he goes like 83. I kind of think of him as pretty similar to Amed Rosario. I think they're gonna steal similar amount of bases. I think Giménez, honestly, I expect his average to drop. I don't expect him to be close to a 300 hitter again. I think, you know, Rosario's average foundation is much better. I'm expecting maybe like 265, maybe 270 from Andrés Giménez. I don't think you're going to see any more home runs. I think, you know, 17 is probably about what you should expect. 20 steals. You know, he could run. He's another guy. He was 20 of 23 running last year. So he's another guy who, with the new rules, I think you could see run a little bit more too. 25 steals, maybe, maybe even up to 30. I mean, this is a guy who ran a lot in the minors, so you know, that wouldn't shock me to see that. I do like him, and I love the fact that he's a second baseman, because second base, as much as people talk about third base, I think second base is real tough to fill, and it seems like a lot of guys get pushed up needlessly just because of the fact that they're second baseman. So. I like Giménez. The draft cost is a little steep, but you're, like you said, you're getting a guy who's not hurting you in any categories and is helping you in several. I wish he hit a little higher in the lineup. That's really the main gripe.
For me, the difference with him and Rosario is, like you said, the second base eligibility, and just seeing we kind of had a run of second baseman go off the board. The only guys that are left right now, I'm looking at, you got Max Muncy. I could have waited on Polanco and Brandon Lau and those kind of guys. I'm still learning the way that 15 teamers work. I've been a 12 team guy for most of my life, and it's very tricky to try and figure out where you're not going to be lacking by the end of a draft, because you're going to be lacking somewhere.
Right.
And I just wanted to secure second and third base, and I'm still kind of lacking in some other areas. But I did want to secure second and third base fairly early, because they are bad. I think second might be a little better in terms of speculating later on. I think it's a little more balanced across the board, where with third, I think it's more top heavy, but I didn't want to come out of the top 100 and still need those positions, as much as there's still other positions I'm lacking and I still need outfielders and a couple other spots. But second base is tricky. And I think a guy like Giménez, he is definitely, if you just take away all positions, if you're just looking at a draft board of the top, you know, however many players, Giménez is not going to be 84th. It does come down to that eligibility. So it's a tricky one. Looking back on it, I think I would make the choice again. I didn't really leave anybody on the board that I love still, so I'll take it. Moving on.
And sorry, real quick. That's one of my rules, is if I don't love someone on the board, I want to fill a position that's tough to fill. Usually it'll be like catcher or closer or something like that. But like you said, second base is one of those positions this year. So I think that was a good call. You know, if you don't have a guy that you're targeting at that spot that you love, then yeah, take something that's that's at least helping you down the line, you're not going to have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, I took Hader pretty early. I have a closer. I still need catchers, but second base I did want to take care of. And with Jimenez, you're probably right about the average. The projections do think it'll come down 30, 35 points. But even if he's a 265 hitter with, 15 to 20 homers and 25 steals.
Yeah, very, very useful for sure.
I'll take that. Even if it's not quite 25 steals, even if it's 20 or so, I'll totally take that. Now, the next guy, I think this guy is very interesting, and I think the price is very interesting as well. Oscar Gonzalez. He hit a couple big home runs in the playoffs. He's the SpongeBob guy, right? He's the guy they call SpongeBob.
Yeah, he comes up to SpongeBob SquarePants theme song, which I fucking hate, but my friends love it, and they get on my case every time it comes on. I'm like, oh god, here we go. But yeah, it definitely stands out. I'll say that.
What are your thoughts on him as a player? I mean, the walk rate's a little bit low, but in terms of he batted .296 over 91 games. He had 11 homers. It was a pretty good cup of coffee. What do you think he's going to do in 2023?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. He's the toughest one for me to kind of figure out. And I was hoping his price tag would be a little lower than what it is. He's going in the top 200. Which is not, terrible or anything. It's just there's a lot of guys around him that I feel better about. I do like him, though. He was the guy coming up through the minors. I don't follow the minors in general, but I do follow the Guardians minors very closely. He hit 31 homers in 2021 in the minors. So, and that was 500 at-bats between AA and AAA. And, he's a guy who he did strike out more when he got into AAA. But then he came up to the majors and he struck out less than 20%. So, 382 plate appearances is a pretty decent sample size. So I'm excited about that. The fact that he's not swinging and missing a ton, although his swinging strike rate was 14.3%. So I do feel like that strikeout rate might go up a bit. But I think it also depends on whether he's going to try to keep hitting for a higher average or if he's going to go for more power. Cause it felt like maybe last year he was holding something back a little bit. Cause this is a guy who, seemed like he could hit 25 plus homers. So, but that's, I do feel like last year he looked like maybe a 20 homer guy. I think in the future he could be a 30 homer guy. It just depends on whether he wants to use that power or if he wants to make more contact. But the big problem with him is he hits too many ground balls, and he's got a 5.4 launch angle, 51% ground ball rate. If he can kind of, but he's always been that way. He's always been a big ground ball hitter through the minors. So I don't know that we can expect a lot of change there. But, 113 max EV, he's got the power. It's just that he doesn't access it as much as you'd think.
He does have the power, and the projections are kind of not really sure where the power is going to be exactly. X has him for 11 homers. Zips has him for 21, though. And there's kind of a couple projections in the middle, ATC at 16. There's kind of a wide range. I think the people who make the projections still, and the computers, I guess, the numbers, are really not sure what to make of him yet, but potentially easily a 20 home run guy, I think, even though, he doesn't help you so much in terms of, and it's kind of a common theme here down the lineup, the run totals. We saw with Josh Naylor last year, the guys at the bottom of the order or even middle of the order. I think Josh Naylor had 47 runs or something, so might not have a ton of runs, but should be a decent source of homers and batting average at the very least. And, the price is actually a little bit higher than I thought it was. I thought he was going outside the top 200 still. At 181, I would tend to agree with you there. I have to kind of retract what I said about liking the price. It's a little bit pricey, probably. I'd probably still pay it, but it really depends on who's still there in that range. Let me just take a look at who else is in that range right now. And I think, the most part, I mean, Brandon Nimmo, Lars Nootbaar is going right around him. There are guys that I do like. So, I mean, I wouldn't cross him off at this price. It's maybe a little bit steeper than I'd love to be paying, and put it that way.
Yeah, there's so I know that Joey Meneses is going right around him. I'm very into Joey Meneses this year. They're both going right around pick 200. So just in terms of straight up outfielder for outfielder, plus Meneses has the first base eligibility on top as well. I don't know. It's hard for me to see Oscar hitting more than 25 homers. I will take the over on 11 though. So,
yeah.
And listen, if we can get 20 to 25 homers with a 270 to 280 average, we're happy with that. It's not bad. It's just, he doesn't run. So there's not that. He should probably hit fifth or sixth in the lineup, I'm guessing now, maybe sixth now, because with Josh Bell there now. Yeah, so that's another thing where his runs will probably lag a bit.
Yeah, I mean, they have been projected, I think, as the seven-hole hitter right now, I think. But six or seven, wherever he is, if you're getting 25 home runs out of somebody in the bottom third or bottom four in the lineup, you know, right now they have it Kwan, Rosario, Ramirez, Bell, Jimenez, Naylor, and then Gonzalez.
That makes sense, probably. And then obviously he could probably move up versus lefties when Naylor sits. And then usually I think they move some other guys around as well versus lefties. I want to say,
does Kwan still stay at the top against lefties?
Yes, Kwan hits at the top every game he starts. I think maybe Jimenez moves around a bit sometimes against lefties. It looks like sometimes he moves up. I don't know. It's seven hole might be what he's looking at, honestly, with the addition of Bell. So, yeah, you know, you think about a guy hitting seventh power, I don't know, a lot of ground balls, solid average, but you're not really getting those counting stats in that case.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Let's move on, though. Let's talk about catcher. And I think the catcher situation is interesting. I was expecting Bo Naylor to be given a shot this year, and then they signed Mike Zunino. What are your thoughts on how they're going to assign playing time? I'd very much like it to just be Naylor, because Zunino is very boring from a fantasy point of view. He's going to give you some cheap home runs, I guess, but that's pretty much it. Naylor seemed ready in the minors. Now, he only played five games in the majors, and it was not the greatest small sample size. Again, eight plate appearances, so nothing you can really take with you. But he seemed ready from his time in the minor leagues. Do you think they're going to give him a chance this year?
I do think he'll get a chance this year. I hear this a lot from non-Clevelanders. We know better just in terms of the fact that we know that the Guardians are never going to start with like a rookie randomly in there at a position like catcher. That's so important from a game calling perspective and defensively, like the Guardians are huge on defensive catcher. So they're going to want to make sure that Bo is 100%, 110% ready to come up and like lead this pitching staff, because this team is going to win and lose by their starting pitching pretty much. The offense is hopefully going to be good enough to win games, but it's going to be those starters that really drive them forward in their bullpen. So they're going to make sure that they have the right catching units in place, and they loved Zunino's defense. So, you know, it's again, like you said, he's not an exciting option like Bo Naylor is from a fantasy standpoint. I do expect Bo Naylor to be up at some point. He's not a guy who I would be drafting unless you're talking about like a draft champions league where you can hold guys and, you know, wait for them to get called up. I think he'll probably get called up. You know, it'll be dependent on how he does, but June, maybe at the earliest, I would say. And you know, I'm no expert with that kind of thing, but, that's just, I feel like they signed Zunino for a reason. I think they want to give him the majority of the run there, and they're not going to bring up Bo Naylor to be like a part-time, like when they bring Bo up, I think it'll either be for a cup of coffee because they're doing well and they don't need him, or it'll be because, hey, we really need him and Zunino's not cutting it and we're ready to completely hand over the reins. And I don't think that'll be until June at the earliest.
It sucks. I really wish that he'd be up. I'm a big fan of the Nailers. Big fan of the Nailers. I saw Josh play way back in the day for the Ontario Blue Jays. And Bo, I never got to see play, but I wish I did. Looking at his stat line, like he looks like he's going to be a very exciting player in the majors. He could be one of the best catchers in fantasy in a couple seasons as a guy who can hit for a decent average. Not going to blow you away there, but double-digit steal potential from a catcher with good power numbers.
Threat. Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, the guys this year who are the stolen base threats behind the plate are Real Muto and Varsho, and they're going 1-2 in terms of catchers pretty much every single time. So Bo Naylor is a top 3 or 5 fantasy catcher in the next couple of years. I could definitely see it. It's not going to happen this year, but, you know, he's kind of interesting. And, you know, the projections, again, kind of disagree on him depending on where you look. Zips is the high man in terms of games played and everything else. They think he's going to play 116 games. I don't know that we're going to get there. The other ones are more in the 50s and 60 range. But, man, if he does get to that 116 games, the projections are 14 homers and 9 steals. So I agree with you in a draft champions. If he's your third or fourth catcher, I think you could be cooking with gas at some point during the season for sure. And for sure in Dynasty, like, I'm not the biggest Dynasty player, but he's got to be, I'm not sure what the market is generally in Dynasty, but I'd be trying to buy him up for sure. Like, he's, especially because it didn't go the greatest in his first couple big league games. He struck out, he had 8 at bats. He struck out 5 times. So maybe some people will see that. And, you know, I doubt many people will read too much into it, but hell, maybe you have some small buying opportunity, especially considering he might not even start the year in the big. So definitely somebody to keep an eye on for sure. Any other thoughts on Naylor before we move it on?
No, I think you said it pretty succinctly.
The last guy in the lineup is somebody who I was interested in last season. He made a fool out of me and out of many people, and that is Miles Straw. We were all expecting another big season from him with steals and good batting average, and it was, to say the least, it was a tough year for people who spent a high draft pick on Miles Straw. He played almost every game. He did not manage to hit a home run. He did steal 21 bases, but that was kind of down from what we were expecting. Do you have any interest in drafting Miles Straw this year?
No, I didn't. I drafted him in I went to First Pitch Arizona last year, and I drafted him, and it was like, you know, this was like October, literally drafting in October. So that was literally the only time I was willing to draft Miles Straw. So he fell to like the 11th round, and I needed some steals, and that was it. So I don't have any. I think he's gonna play. Unless he's hit so poorly that he gets taken out of the lineup. But even though he did close the season hitting better, I think a lot of that was just kind of BABIP luck compared to BABIP bad luck before. I think the truth kind of lies in the middle. I think he is what he is. And I don't roster guys like that. I get my steals from legitimate hitters who also steal bases. So I just don't think there's much room for him outside of super deep leagues.
Yeah, he's another John Birdie, essentially. I know John Birdie was very sexy for a while this season, but they're essentially the same dude for fantasy. Now, that's the starting lineup. Do you have any interest in Will Brennan? I've heard a lot of people I know who I respect in the prospect world talking him up. Do you think he's going to have a role this year? Do you have any interest in him at all?
I do. I'm a big Will Brennan fan. I think he's a lot like kind of a young Michael Brantley kind of guy. I don't know that he's going to get the playing time. He's a guy who I'd be looking to draft in DCs, because I think at some point you're going to have injuries and whatnot open up spots for him. I think he's that next guy in line outside of the starters who, I mean, he's going to start some games, you know, like, they're not going to play the same guys every day, but he's also not going to be worth, you know, drafting to hold in like a typical standard year long league. But he is a guy who I have interest in Dynasty, in DCs. You know, like I said, when there's injuries, I think he's gonna get some regular playing time. He's definitely interesting to me. He's gonna be a high average kind of guy. He doesn't have a ton of power, but he's you know, he can run a little bit, and I really love his approach. So you know, he stole between AA, AAA and the majors last year, he stole 22 bases. So, and he hit 14 homers. So, you know, he can kind of be that 15-15, 15-20 kind of guy eventually when he gets full playing time.
It'd be nice if he did take over for Straw. I guess Straw's defense will probably keep him in the lineup there.
But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but it would be nice.
It would be nice. I think Brennan can play center field. I think he's more of a corner guy. You'd probably know better, but I think he is capable of playing center.
He has played center throughout his that's his main position in the minors.
Okay.
So,
okay. Yeah. That shows what I know about prospects. That's why you do not listen to me in terms of dynasty and prospects. we're strictly redraft here.
For the most only part. Team I know, Joe. This is the only team I know. Any other team, I have no idea.
Yeah, there's you know, double A and single A players for the Blue Jays that I could tell you some things about, and then if you talk about any other team, I'm totally there with you. I'm not very well versed in terms of prospects. You got certain people in the industry who are so great, and they can mention some random guy in high A and what he did last. Too much to keep an eye on just in terms of the major leagues for
They're probably getting paid to know that stuff, though. So, you know, Cross and Clegg and James Anderson and all them. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Those guys are great. They know what they're talking about. We'll leave that to them. We'll leave those conversations to them.
Oh, by the way, we kind of skipped over Josh Bell. I don't know if you wanted to touch on him as well. We did.
Yeah, we did. We kind of you know, combine the Josh conversation. But yeah, Josh Bell, what are your thoughts on Bell exactly? I kind of just framed it from would he take away Josh Naylor's playing time point of view. But in terms of just what Josh Bell can do, he hit a massive home run yesterday, the day before. Where are you at right now on him?
Well, I think if you kind of ignore the super happy fun ball 2019 Josh Bell where he hit 37 homers, I think you can kind of see like he's like a high 20s home runs guy. And, you know, I think, you know, with like a 265 maybe kind of average, you know, he's not going to hurt you like some of those other guys. I think the projections are way low on his home runs. I see a lot of like 17 to 20 projections. Steamer's the high one at 22. I'll take the over on that. I think he's going to hit 25 to 30. I think he's going to hit 260 to 270. And I think he's going to be a force in the middle of that lineup. And I love the signing. I mean, I was very happy. I wish it was a legit 2-year deal, because basically it's like a 1-year deal where if he does remotely good, he's going to skip out of the second year. So that sucks. But, you know, Guardians fans kind of know just to take it year to year. You know, we know we're never going to spend the big bucks. It's just going to be, you know, competing in that year, and the next year we'll figure it out all over again. So I'm hoping he can help lead us to back through the playoffs again, and this time maybe get a little further.
You know, people like to shit on Cleveland because they don't spend a lot of money, but this lineup as constructed is very solid. It really is. 1 through 7 is very good. Zanino and Straw are kind of whatever. They're more for their defense. But even Zanino can give you 20 homers. Straw can give you like 20 steals. There is certain value there. I don't think they're great players necessarily, but the top 7 in that lineup, it's a lot of fun. At the very least, it's a fun lineup. And like you said off the top, like they should win this division again. Maybe the White Sox bounce back, and they should bounce back a little bit. It was very disappointing, but it'll be either the Guardians or the White Sox, I think. And Cleveland, you know, if their pitching staff can do what we're hoping for them to do, they should be able to pull through in that division. And Cleveland's pitching, you know this better than I know this, one of the better teams at developing pitchers across baseball. What are your thoughts overall in terms of this rotation of Bieber, McKenzie, Quantrill, Savali, and Zach Plesac? I guess start at the top.
Yeah, I mean, Bieber is a guy I have a lot of faith in. I will say I was concerned last year with the shoulder injury and then the velocity decline. You know, I've talked a lot about, I mean, those are red flags, right? But then he got through the whole year like okay, and the velo never ticked back up, which is unfortunate because basically he went from being a top 5 starter in baseball to just being really, really good. But the thing is, it's not going to make him a bad pitcher because his fastball already sucked. So the velo being worse makes the fastball worse, but he has those elite secondaries to rely on with his slider and his curve and his cutter, slider change and cutter, where he just gets all kinds of swinging strikes. So I'm all about Bieber this year as like I see some people trying to fade him and stuff. You're going to regret that. He's just so good, and he's such a great whip guy. Like, he's not going to walk people. So like, he'll give up a couple of homers here and there, but usually there's nobody on base. So it's like, you know, solo homer here, solo homer there. Okay, whatever. I'm still all about Shane Bieber this year at the price.
I don't know what to make of him, to be honest with you. Like, the shoulder stuff really concerned me last year, and I didn't go in and draft him. And I thought, you know, once we saw the low velocity and the lack of strikeouts, I heard, you know, one of the funniest things I heard all of last year was him being referred to as fancy Zach Greinke, which is kind of what he was for a little while last season. He was like a fancier Zach Greinke with the low strikeout rate. I mean, we saw him go from strikeout rates that were, you know, in the 30s, and in that Cy Young year was over 40, down to 25. And he also trimmed the walk rate, but the velo, the shoulder concerns, like, I can't believe he threw 200 innings. I really, truly cannot believe he got there. I'm a little bit nervous, especially because I just love the pitching pool this season. I personally don't want to be taking Bieber. If I'm taking him, it's probably because I've really missed out on a couple other guys, and there's been like a big pitching run, and I don't want to miss out in that, like, probably, where is he going, to the fourth round right now, roughly in the fourth round?
Fourth, fifth, yeah. And by main event time, it'll be higher. I think for me, the thing is that the slider and the curve both get 22% plus swinging strike rates. Like, that is phenomenal. There's very few pitchers in the majors who have multiple 20%+ swinging strike rate pitches. So he's never dependent on the fastball. It's just his, I mean, he throws it 34% of the time, 35% of the time, but You know, he locates it well. He usually, you know, it's going to get hit hard when he gets hit, but with those secondaries, he's going to get a lot of swing and misses. But man, I just really hope the velo can come back, because if it does, he's going to be amazed. Like, that makes that pick going from solid to phenomenal. So I here's hoping, but we'll see.
To drop your strikeout rate that much and still have a, you know, an arguably a better season. I know he was injured in 2021, but you know, per start, he was very, very good. You know, even as much as I say I want to stay away from him, he's never had a bad season. He has never, you know, his rookie season wasn't great. You know, you kind of write that off as a rookie learning curve. 328, 163, 317, and 288 are his ERAs the last four seasons. So I know 2020 was short. I know 2021 he was hurt, but still, he's never been bad, really. So there's a lot that you can fall back on there. And like you said, the fastball, he doesn't rely on that velocity. He doesn't need to blow you away to dominate you still. So I'm personally not probably going to be the one to draft him, but I don't have any real problem with drafting him. Tristan McKenzie, on the other hand. No, sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just saying that's fair. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, Tristan McKenzie, on the other hand, I'm personally not drafting. You know, we talked about him on Potapalooza the other day. I just don't trust the fact that, you know, his strikeout rate did get better in the second half. It has fallen the last three seasons. You know, went from 11.3 Ks per nine down to 10.2, down to below nine. And granted, not the biggest sample sizes in those first two seasons. But he's also outperforming his pitching indicators pretty substantially. Like last year was close to a run, roughly, you know, half a run to a run when you look at xERA, FIP, and xFIP. I know that those metrics tend to favor guys who have massive strikeout numbers. So lowering your strikeout numbers are not going to help those metrics necessarily. But I'm personally not going to be drafting McKenzie this year at the price. And I think that's what it comes down to, is the draft price. Where are you at right now on Tristan, though?
I think there's kind of overreaction on both sides. Like, so when I see, you know, someone strike out walking rates, I get my base from what they do in the minors. And, you know, generally if they're like an 11 strikeout per nine kind of guy in the minors, they might be, you know, 10 or 9.5 in the majors. And, but usually the walk rates translate pretty well. So seeing the walk rate come down from 4.35 in 2021 walks per nine down to 2 walks per nine last year didn't shock me. I think the 2 is probably, you know, a little generous, but, you know, he was like a 2.5 walks per nine to 2.8 walks per nine guy in the minors. So I was never expecting him to be like a bad control guy like he was in 2021. You're quoting the short season for the 11.3 K per nine. Yeah, I wasn't thinking that was going to stick. You know, I think a lot of guys just went all out because it was a short season. They didn't have to save their arms for anything. But I expect his K rate to come up from 8.94 K per nine. I think it'll probably be 9 to 9.5 in that range. I like him. I don't love him. I don't think he's like a super target for me. But if he's, because he kind of goes ahead of some other guys that I like that go a little bit after him. I'm just going to look real quick, but like, I know there's some guys that I took in my, like Blake Snell goes pick 115, and I would take him over Tristan, who goes at 87. I just think he's going too high is really the main thing, but he's so good with whip. That's the main, like, it's hard to find guys that you can rely on for good whip, because Snell, as much as I like him, man, he can get blown up and his whip can be real high. I don't have those same concerns with Tristan. I think Tristan's going to be a 1 to 110, maybe 115 whip at the highest. So I do, there's a lot of stuff I like about Tristan. I just think he's going too high.
That's what it comes down to for me. Like, I don't hate him or anything. I mean, the projections this year aren't great. They think he's going to be like probably close to a 4 ERA with the strikeout numbers bouncing back up. Generally, it's expected to go back up over 9 to like 9.3, 9.4. I worry about the projections and I worry about the price. Like, that's really, truly, if he was going 30 picks lower, then I'd take him. But the fact that he's going ahead of George Kirby, like, I would definitely take George Kirby. Robbie Ray, I think I'd be more comfortable with Robbie Ray considering the strikeout floor. You know, Blake Snell is definitely one. Clayton Kershaw, even though there's risk there. There's risk everywhere, really. In terms of pitchers, we never really know. But McKenzie, I think it's the price. I think it's truly the price. It's not really the skills, even though the skills have worried me a little bit. It's mostly the strikeouts that have kind of worried me, but he did start to rebound. Joe Bond did remind me on the weekend that over the course of the season, his strikeout total did kind of rebound month by month. It did end up, I think, 28 or something in the last month of the season. So there's definitely room for him to grow there. In terms of the rest of the rotation, I'm not very interested in any of these guys, particularly for fantasy. Quantrill, Savali, and Plesac. Are you have any interest in these guys? Because personally, for me, they're kind of stayaways at this point. Even though I trust the organization, they can tinker with different things. But as of right now, not a lot of interest in those guys.
Yeah, actually. So I will say I agree with you on Plesac. No interest. Quantrill, he's actually not going as early as I thought he'd go. I thought people would see his ERA and like jump him up. But he's actually going like pick 330, which I mean, I think it's fine because I think you're going to get volume out of him. I like him. I don't really like Quantrill because I'm not buying that those skills are legit completely. But he does have some hitting suppression skills that I do think his ERA won't be as bad as like the projections have him for. Like, I don't think he's going to have a 4.5 ERA or anything like that. But I also don't think he's going to have a 3.38 ERA either. So he's not a target for me, but I will tell you who is a target, and that's Aaron Savali. Yeah. Really has a lot of trouble staying healthy, but like you said, with pitchers, we never really know. You know, even the guys who we think are safe often end up not being safe. So when I'm going to take a shot, I'm taking a lot of Aaron Savali because that curve is elite. He does not have a good fastball, but he has enough in there. Like he threw his curveball 27.5%, which was 11.5% more than the previous year. And you really start to see him start to break out. He was striking out more guys last year, and then he got hurt. You know, he got his K rate over 9K per nine, and that was a 97 inning sample. It's not exactly a small sample. Elite control. So, you know, again, he's not going to be walking a lot of guys. It's just, can he strike out enough guys and avoid getting hit? Because when he gets hit, he's going to get hit pretty hard. Kind of like Bieber, but you know, if he had one other good secondary, if he can develop one other one, he can be really, really good. But for where he goes, he's absolutely a target for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair with Savali. I think you kind of talked me into him there just in that brief thing. And I'm just looking at his numbers here. I think that, you know, look at the strikeouts are not bad, like over 9 Ks per 9, considering the walk rate, you know, yeah. 24% strikeout rate, 5% walk rate. I think it's fairly reasonable. The ERA kind of scares you from last year, but if you look at the indicators, they're all quite a bit lower.
Yeah, look at the Sierra at 3.55, and he's a good whip guy too. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm more interested in him than I would be in the other guys for sure. Quantrill, I think, is a bit of a trap, even though the price isn't that high. He's actually going about 340. Savali's about 300. I think that the 15 wins from last year, you know, they're not very sticky year-to-year wins. It's probably not going to be 15 again. He literally doesn't know how to strike out batters, which is unfortunate for fantasy. 16% K rate is not really going to play. Now, as like a deeper league kind of plug-in, you know, I think he's okay. But not so, like I try and at least target, and then there's different things, right? There's different skill sets that you can target. Sometimes you're looking for a guy who has like low whip or whatever, like with McKenzie, or strikeouts or something, but he doesn't really have one skill necessarily that stands out to me so, so much. The walk rate's pretty good at 6%. It's very good at 6%, but there's nothing that makes me jump and want to really necessarily go and draft him. I'm totally with you on Plesac. No interest in Plesac. Savali, I do have a little bit more interest in, but Quantrill, I just can't get behind. I want to, I just can't really do it. Even though the price is reasonable, I just don't think I'm going to be the one to draft.
I think he's a decent pick in DCs where you're just looking for volume, when you're just wanting to have guys you can throw in. I'm not interested in him at all in redraft because he's the kind of guy who you're going to be able to pick up and stream. I think you can do better. Take some higher shot, like some shots at some more talented guys who are more volatile and hope that they end up sticking because those are going to be actually worthwhile and guys you could end up keeping. Whereas a guy like Quantrill, you know, he's waiver wire fodder essentially. So, I will also say, I doubt anybody's still doing DCs, but if you are, a couple names I really like, I think Tanner Bibby is going to be the next guy who comes up, and I really like him. He's, he throws hard. He throws like 97. But he's got like elite control. Not a super high strikeout rate in the minors, like 9K per nine kind of guy. But he's that kind of Cleveland guy that they can develop. Like he's that same, you know, high control, you know, guy who can get. I think that they can develop him further to get more strikeouts. And with Cody Morris being hurt now, I loved Cody Morris, but now I don't know when he's going to be back. So I think the Bibby's the next guy to come up. And another guy, Joey Cantillo, who raised his velocity from 89 miles per hour when they got him. He's now throwing like sitting 95 and he can hit like 97. So to like raise your velocity that much. Yeah. Pretty crazy. And he's on their 40 man too. They had to protect him from the rule five. So I think he's going to be, we might see him at some point too, because I don't know how much more patience they're going to have with Plesac. Dude just does dumb shit every year. So personally, I was hoping that we would trade him in the offseason, but I don't think anybody wants him. So, at some point he can lose his job. You know, we talked about Bieber and Savali's injury risk. So I think we could see a couple of these guys up this year. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland, that's incredible, going from 89 to sitting 95. How long was that, within a year, or how long did that take?
I want to say maybe 2 years. I can't remember, and I don't know what there's articles out there about it, but if unless you're in Cleveland, you probably, you know, and like looking at all this stuff like a freak, yeah, like I do, but you probably don't know about it. But yeah, so like they got him in the I want to say it was the Clevenger deal. It was a deal with San Diego. I know that. So there was I think it was the one that they got Quantrill in as well. It was like Quantrill, and they got a couple other guys. Arias, Gabriel Arias, who's on the bench for the Guardians right now, and then Cantillo. And Cantillo was a guy that they had interest in general. Like he just knew how to pitch well. But then when he got his velocity way up, they're like, oh, this guy has some ceiling to him now too. So he's interesting.
I think Cleveland, I mean, they're on a very short list of the teams that develop pitching better than anybody else in baseball. I think San Francisco is there. San Francisco, I think their specialty is more like bringing in, you know, guys who are middle-aged and they tinker with a couple things. They add a pitch, yeah, or they take away a pitch, and then you get Carlos Rodon's and Kevin Gausman's and you get Woods and Cobb's and those kind of guys. I'm missing a couple because there's just so many examples. But Cleveland is really, I think, probably the best team at actually just developing pitchers from scratch in all of baseball. In terms of the bullpen, a lot of the team previews that we've done so far, there's more of a question mark as to who is going to be the closer. With Cleveland, there is no such argument, even though you got Karinchak, who's very good behind him, but Emmanuel Clase, cut and dry here as the closer. Yep. Do you have any worry at all about Clase? Does anything concern you? I can't, looking through his Fangraphs pages, I can't find much that does concern me, but is there anything there that we should be keeping an eye on for him?
No, absolutely zero concerns with him. It's rare that I'll say that about a closer. There's like two or three guys. So yeah, no, he's one of them, thankfully.
He's like, him and Diaz are the new Hader and Hendricks, essentially. I know his strikeouts are not maybe as high as you would want. He's still striking out more than nine batters per nine innings. But I mean, that's probably the only small gripe you can make about him. He is ridiculously good. Karinchak, yeah, I think, is very good as well. Do you think there's any room for Karinchak to be kind of a fantasy option, you know, in the vein of like Andres Munoz from last year, or like a Jason Adams, somebody who just gets you a lot of strikeouts and maybe they can help you out with some? I mean, the ratios are pretty good. Last year, good whip, good ERA numbers. Do you think there's any interest in having him on a standard fantasy team?
Yeah, I mean, there could be. The thing with him is he's kind of frustrating because he has closer stuff. Like, this guy can close. The problem is he's so inconsistent. Like, he'll have times where he is untouchable. I mean, like, his stuff moves more than Clase. He doesn't throw 100, but I mean, he throws really hard. And I mean, he can be that guy, but he just, there's other times where he just loses feel. He'll lose feel for his, I forget, it's his slider or whatever it is. And then other times he'll lose feel for his fastball. And it's like, man, if this guy can just have some consistency to him, he can be that kind of guy. And yeah, I think he's worth taking a shot on if you're looking for just like, I don't know what kind of league you're in, a saves holds kind of league where, you know, guys who are non-closers can have value too. But I do think that Trevor Stephan is probably their most trusted after Clase right now. Karen Sheck has more of the closer stuff, but Stefan is the guy that they trust when they need to get an out, because Karen Sheck can lose control at any time. And like, if you bring him into a bad situation, he might end up striking them out, or he might end up walking the bases loaded. So you got to be a little cautious with Karen Sheck, but he definitely has that potential.
I found a lot of value last year. I actually won my home league through using more of like a relief pitcher strategy. I had Andres Munoz, I had Jason Adam, and you know, they didn't get a lot of saves from me, but they kept the ratios down. They gave me a lot of strikeouts week in and week out. Now they don't have walk rates that look like Karen Sheck's, which is 13% last year. He's still striking out 40% of batters. There's definitely some interest there for sure, and he definitely does have closer stuff. But with Class A ahead of him, if you're in a saves and holds league, for sure. But that home league I'm talking about was just a straight-up saves league, and there's still, you know, not necessarily Karen Sheck, but there could be some relievers out there. And Karen Sheck is on a short list of guys who could still have value without necessarily giving you big saves numbers. He had 3 last year. You know, he's probably going to end up with 2 or 3 this year. But that strikeout number, you know, the K per 9 last year was over 14. So that's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm not hoping for really anything in particular with him. Just get the walks down if you can at all. I mean, that's really the main concern with Karen Sheck. But is there anything else that we've missed here, Dave, in terms of going over the Guardians, any prospects or anything, you know, anything that people might want to be keeping in mind as they go to draft?
No, I think we covered, because you even brought up Will Brennan. I was going to bring up Will Benson, but then we ended up trading him to Cincinnati. I do think he's interesting if you're doing DCs, because he really cut down on his K rate, where, you know, he's a former first-round pick. He's got immense power, phenomenal speed, but dude swings and misses like Joey Gallo. But last year, he cut his K rate way down, so for the Reds, he's a little bit of an interesting guy. But in terms of prospects for the Guardians, like hitting prospects, you know, obviously Bo Naylor is the big one. But outside of that, I don't think there's anybody that Brian Rocchio is interesting, but I don't know if he'd be in their plans in any way, shape, or form for this year. Tyler Freeman's a little bit interesting for DCs because he put on a lot of muscle in the offseason. So he's an elite contact guy too. Like, he doesn't strike out. He's a high average guy with some speed. So if he can add a little power to that, he might be someone who comes into play at some point, you know, like a last round pick kind of in a DC kind of thing. But other than that, I think that's pretty much it. You know, we're the Guardians are an organization with a piece of shit, cheap owner and the best front office in baseball, in my opinion. So they do so much with so little. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, like I said there, they don't spend money, and everybody knows they don't spend money, but still, this team won the division last year. They look, you know, they had Jose Ramirez, who was an MVP candidate year in and year out. Shane Bieber's just a couple of years removed from a Cy Young. Yeah. Class A is arguably the best closer in baseball. You know, very young lineup that has still got several years together to kind of do something. I don't know if they're necessarily going to be a World Series team, but the oldest player in the lineup is Mike Zunino at 31, and I don't think he's going to be there for that long.
Their two oldest players are the guys that they added this offseason, and Josh Bell and Mike Zunino. They're the youngest lineup in baseball last year by, like, a lot, I think.
It's crazy. So there's definitely a lot of hope for the future. I'm excited for this team, even though I don't cheer for them. I don't have any rooting interest at all in Cleveland. I'm excited, certainly excited to draft a couple of them, and I'm excited about my Andrés Giménez share. Hopefully that turns out okay. But Dave, thank you so much for joining me here today, man. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely, Joe. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. And anytime you need a guest, I'm always here, buddy.
That's awesome, man. I really appreciate it. You want to just let everybody know once more where they can find you and everything you got going on?
Yeah, that's at RunDMCD on Twitter. And you can find me on Friends with Benefits every Monday night at 10 p.m. And, if you're interested in playing in Earth, and if you don't know what Earth is, please get in touch with me and find out, or ask Joe. It's phenomenal. It's all about meeting people in your community. We donate to a charity. So GLARF won last year, so we're donating to the Lost Boys in Chicago, and I'm really excited to, we're bringing the kids in, and we're going to throw a pizza party, and we're going to we've got like that big comical check kind of thing, you know. I want to get some pictures with that and everything. I'm really looking forward to that. And, we've got really cool local trophies in every regional league. So, like, you know, Barf has the barf bucket. We've got the Great Lakes belt in Glarf. So I don't know what you guys have, actually. I haven't heard from Ryan what your trophy was. I don't know if he's officially made one yet or not, or ordered no one.
Okay. Is there an overall component to the Earth Leagues?
There is, yeah. The overall winner gets a title belt. So actually, I've got mine from Glarf right here. So this is the one that I designed for Glarf.
But in terms of like all the leagues together.
Yeah. And then so the one that's that Ryan Venancia won last year, he should actually have gotten today. So I'll have them so I'm gonna have him put that's pictures cool. of it online. But it's the same type of belt, but it's got the Earth logo in the middle, and then the side logos are the logo of the winning player, and then the other logo is the logo of the winning league, which would be Glarf this year. So and then he's Turf, so he has the Turf logo as one of them. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see if he got it and if he likes it and all that stuff. So I'll have to talk to him and find out. But yeah, I just there's so much about this that I love. I love giving back with the charity aspect of it, and I love getting together live. Like it's all about meeting the people in your region and getting together, getting all 15 of you theoretically, hopefully together live. But even if one or two are drafting remotely, that's okay. But you know, and just meeting each other and hanging out and making friends.
I think we've got 13 who are going to be there live.
That's great.
I think 12 or 13 anyway, which is, you know, about as much as you can hope for, getting everybody together from different parts on one day. It'd be nice if we could get everybody there, but we got somebody drafting from other side of the country. And that's Woody. I don't know. You've been down to Arizona. You might
know. I know Woody. Woody's like the greatest guy ever. He comes the first pitch Arizona with two suitcases, no clothes. He's got one suitcase full of Canadian snacks and one suitcase full of Canadian beers. And he'll just keep feeding you. Like when I was there, he would literally keep going back to his room and he'll be like, Dave, you got to try this. And he'd go grab another beer or another snack and bring them out. I'm like, oh my God, Woody, you're too much, man. And he sent me like a big box full of Canadian snacks. Like, I mean, just the nicest guy ever. And I know he told me he lives in like the middle of nowhere because he was concerned about that. And I was like, dude, just join. It's okay. If you have to draft remotely, we understand. But if you can make it, that'd be great. But yeah, just a wonderful guy.
Yeah, it was great meeting him in Arizona. He did have the patented suitcase full of candy this year as well. It was a lot of fun. I'm used to the Canadian sweets, but it was still fun to meet him and to hang out with everybody and see their excitement at these Canadian candies that are so commonplace that to me and stores everything else around here. But he knows how to make the people happy.
He does.
But Dave, once again, thank you so much for joining us here. It was a great Absolutely. Time. You guys should definitely be checking out everything that Dave has going on. Check him out on Twitter. Check out Friends of Fantasy Benefits because it is really a great podcast. And like Dave mentioned a minute ago, doing a lot of charitable stuff. Potapalooza just finished. Earth is going to donate the winning, or not the winnings, but the league fees to different charities. So, you know, great people, great causes, and great content. So definitely go check out Friends of Fantasy Benefits and check out all of Dave's work. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at JoeOrico99. More importantly, though, go check out the company page at EthosFantasyBB. That's where all our new articles and podcasts get linked out. We had a couple of articles go out today about decision matrix making, how to choose between two players who are very similar ADP, similar style players. That was a two-parter. We also have a bust article that went live. There's a ton of stuff. You guys can find it all at sportsethos.com. But until tomorrow, guys, I hope you have a great night and a safe evening. But take care and cheers.